KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
There are so many things that these health agencies do that are not political, that are simply in service of keeping Americans, keeping health workers informed.
The Trump administration told government health agencies to pause their public communications. How could that affect people's health?
For Wednesday, January 22nd, this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Juana Summers. This hour, we'll look at some of the big changes President Trump has implemented out of the gate, from limiting public health communications
to saying churches and schools in the U.S. are no longer off limits to federal agents rounding up migrants without legal status.
Later, Israel says Hamas cannot govern Gaza after the war, so who will?
They cannot rule on their own, but they can obstruct anybody else from ruling without their acceptance.
Plus, the rise of American oligarchs.
This is not new. It's only its visibility is new.
First the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Some federal judges in Washington are sharply criticizing President Trump's decision to pardon more than 1,500 people who were charged in connection with the deadly January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. NPR's Tom Dreisbach has more.
The judges at the Washington, D.C. federal courthouse handled all of the January 6th cases. Now, some of those judges have used legal filings to push back against Trump's pardons and defend their handling of these cases. District Judge Tanya Chutkan said, quote, "No pardon can change the tragic truth of what happened," or, she said, "whitewash the terror of that day." Senior Judge Beryl Howell described the rioters as, quote, "poor losers" for the reaction to the 2020 election. She said allowing them to get away with their crimes raises the specter of future lawlessness. Trump has defended his pardons and commutations for even violent rioters by saying that they were treated unfairly. Tom Dreisbach, NPR News.
And the Trump administration is suspending all refugee admissions to the U.S., and that includes Afghans who helped the U.S. during America's longest war. NPR's Michelle Kellerman has more.
The State Department has told agencies that help resettle refugees that all arrivals have been suspended and previously planned travel should be canceled. The move leaves thousands of refugees already cleared to move to the U.S. in limbo. The ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Jean Shaheen, is urging the Trump administration to reconsider. She's expressed alarm that more than 1,600 Afghans who were cleared to resettle in the U.S. have had their flights canceled. She says the U.S. should not turn its back on them or on others in need, including refugees fleeing violence in Sudan and Burma. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
A rare winter storm still has a grip on the Deep South. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports both frigid temperatures and snowfall amounts are setting records.
The ice and snow have snarled traffic, closed ports and schools, and shut down air travel across the Gulf Coast. New Orleans is deploying Mardi Gras cleanup equipment to plow snow from the French Quarter. Several places in South Louisiana registered more than 10 inches of snow, including 13.4 inches in Grand Coteau and 10 inches in Breaux Bridge. Gulf Shores, Alabama got nearly 9 inches, as did towns in the Florida Panhandle, breaking records that date to the late 1800s. Sub-freezing temperatures are also in the record books. The National Weather Service says it was warmer in Anchorage, Alaska, than it was in Atlanta, New Orleans, and Jacksonville, Florida. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, Orange Beach, Alabama.
And you're listening to NPR News from Washington. Governor Kathy Hochul of New York has become the latest leader to propose a cell phone ban in the state's schools. She announced the proposal today. NPR's Janaki Mehta has more.
Starting next fall, students in the state of New York may have to give up their cell phones while they're at school. Governor Hochul says the ban is based in part on research that shows the damaging effects of phones and social media on children's mental health.
Kids are being besieged with addictive algorithms, toxic social media, and cell phones that just can be so manipulative that it becomes addictive like a drug.
The approach is gaining bipartisan traction. At least 24 states have enacted or proposed restrictions on phones during school hours. The New York State United Teachers Union has endorsed Hochul's proposal, which would require legislator approval before going into effect. Janaki Mehta, NPR News.
Just as the trial was set to begin, Prince Harry has agreed to a settlement with Rupert Murdoch's UK tabloids that includes a full apology from The Sun for unlawful information gathering and phone hacking. The settlement avoids what could have been a weeks-long trial and ends a years-long battle to hold the newspapers accountable for invasions of privacy. The amount of the settlement wasn't released. In addition, the company apologized to former Member of Parliament Tom Watson, now a member of the House of Lords, for surveilling him from 2009 to 2011 when he was investigating the Murdochs for Parliament. U.S. futures contracts are trading mixed. Dow futures up a fraction. NASDAQ futures down about 0.2%. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at LodestarFoundation.org.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Juana Summers in Washington.
And I'm Ari Shapiro. It's only taken a few days for the Trump administration to make some profound changes to how the government functions. And we're going to look now at one change that could affect public health in the U.S. The administration has told federal health agencies to pause external communications, including health advisories, updates to websites, and more. Dan Diamond helped report this story for The Washington Post. Welcome.
Ari, thank you for having me.
Well, this order covers the Department of Health and Human Services, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the National Institutes of Health. What exactly is the Trump administration telling them to do, or rather telling them not to do?
Well, Ari, that's part of what we're trying to get to the bottom of as well. On Tuesday, the new Trump administration officials instructed health agencies to pause their communications, and that encompasses a range of messages, things that would be posted on social media, health alerts that might be sent out about an emerging threat. It's all manner of communications as far as we can tell. And the health officials that we spoke to are confused, too, about the extent of this pause, how long it might last, what happens if there is an urgent threat that the American public needs to know about. So it has only been a few days and some transition was to be expected. But the pause and its potential scope is what is worrying the health officials who spoke to The Washington Post.
So there's a lot that we don't know. This wasn't a public announcement. How did you even know that it was happening?
Folks that I've talked to inside the health department, folks that my colleagues Lena Sun and Rachel Rubin have also spoken to, they all kind of came to us around the same time and said, we don't know what's happening here. We don't know what will happen if we need to get an urgent message out to the public. We reached out to the Trump administration. As we are talking on Wednesday, we have not gotten a response on what the strategy is and how long this pause might last.
Well, as you said, it is a huge range of communications. So give us a specific example of something that could conceivably have an impact on Americans, like the H5N1 bird flu outbreak, which is right now spreading from birds to cattle and occasionally to humans. What does this new order mean for tracking and communicating about that outbreak?
It could mean several things. There are websites and data sources that need to be updated publicly. It's unclear right now whether that will happen promptly. There are research briefs that have been underway about avian flu and who could be affected and the ways that it has been transmitted. There were some that were scheduled to be published this week. As of the time that we did our story, we were told that that was on hold, that those reports might be delayed. So we will find out very soon whether that has been interrupted or not.
You said that the Trump administration did not respond to your request for comment. Any idea why they would be doing this? How long it might last?
I think the generous approach, Ari, is that a new administration has come in, needs to understand what's going on at these important agencies, wants to potentially review some of the messages that might have been scheduled to go out. But there are so many things that these health agencies do that are not political, that are simply in service of keeping Americans, keeping health workers informed. It's not plausible that all of those communications should be reviewed by new political appointees and transmitted quickly. So I think the goal of having some review on maybe the most sensitive politically oriented messages might make sense. these other things that are done by career civil servants, I'm not aware of any recent effort, say by the Biden administration, to stop and review all of those messages too.
What reaction has there been from public health officials outside of the federal government?
Most folks that we have heard from have been alarmed, concerned. I've heard from global experts abroad who want to know what this means for globally communicating about the risks of disease in America. There are folks who are just in the Biden administration who are understandably outraged by this. I have heard from some former Trump officials who have said, look, it's only been a couple days. If this continues for a week, 2 weeks, then it's a real problem. But we should offer the transition team some grace. But the scope of the pause is what gave my colleagues Lena Sun, Rachel Rubin, and I real thought about doing a story here. It's one thing to say, look, we're going to take some of our messages down for a day and just make sure that everything is organized. It's another thing to have this blanket order that extends across agencies and affects thousands of employees.
How unusual is this?
When the Trump administration took power the first time, there was a slowdown on messages being put out across multiple federal agencies. So there can be some transition period where the new officials want to take stock of what's happening. I will say, Ari, one reason folks are so concerned is career civil servants have long memories. They remember 5 years ago when the Trump administration really did try to shape some of the messages coming out from public health agencies during the coronavirus pandemic. And I think that's one reason why so many officials reached out to us and said, we're worried about what this could mean.
Dan Diamond covers the White House for The Washington Post. Thank you very much.
Ari, thanks for having me on.
Just hours after being sworn in for a second term, President Trump followed through on a campaign promise, pardoning rioters involved with the attack on the U.S. Capitol 4 years ago. It was one of scores of actions he signed in the Oval Office Monday night.
So this is January 6th. These are the hostages. Approximately 1,500 for a pardon. Full pardon.
As NPR's Elena Moore reports, the broad nature of the pardons, including for those who committed violence, is leaving some Trump supporters disappointed.
Dan Morrow lives in a small city outside Des Moines, Iowa. He's an independent who's voted for Republican and Democratic presidential candidates in the past. But since 2016, it's been Trump all the way.
When he came down that escalator all those years ago, I said to my friends at the time, we were watching television, I said, this guy's going to be president.
Morrow has been keeping tabs on Trump's first moves since he returned to the White House Monday. Morrow supports his decision to pardon January 6th rioters and said he has friends who attended Trump's rally that day and did not go to the Capitol.
Everything they saw was a very peaceful situation. If you did not harm or you did not hurt, you didn't, you know, physically accost a police officer, I'm good with you getting out. I have no problem with it.
But these were sweeping pardons and included individuals who committed violent crimes. That's something Morrow admits is tough to reconcile. David McLeod feels the same way.
I don't agree with it. I don't like it. I think it should have been done differently, but I wasn't surprised by it.
McLeod lives in Linden, Michigan. He's an independent who reluctantly voted for Trump. He said that while some of the January 6th rioters should have gotten lesser punishments, he was upset the pardons included all offenders.
We saw people breaking windows, hitting cops, bear spray, you know, tear gas. You know, those people should stay in prison. They should stay in jail.
Morrow and McLeod were among respondents to an NPR PBS News Marist poll from early January, before Trump took office. They both supported the idea of pardons. A majority of Republicans felt that way, too. Kay Fitzsimmons of Greenville, South Carolina, stands by the president's pardons.
They had blanket convictions, so blanket commutations is, I can live with that.
She also took issue with clemency actions taken by former President Joe Biden before leaving office. But to most voters, Trump's pardons are unpopular. The poll found that 6 in 10 Americans disapproved of it, including 2/3 of independents.
They should be serving their time. I think it's pretty much a slap in the face of the law establishment.
Dan Brown used to work as a police officer in Washington, D.C., and now lives in Somerville, South Carolina. After backing Democrats for nearly a decade, Trump got his vote in November. He wants the president to take action on immigration. But on the topic of January 6th, he pins the blame on Trump.
It was an insurrection because, to me, he incited those people, but he let them go. I don't agree with it.
But as president, Brown admits Trump can pretty much release whoever he wants. Elena Moore, NPR News, Washington.
The story was co-reported by NPR political correspondent Ashley Lopez.
One of President Trump's first actions in office was to delay a ban on TikTok. That hasn't always been his position. Over the weekend, millions of TikTok users experienced a blip. For roughly 14 hours, the app was unavailable as the new law was about to take effect.
And non-American TikTokers saw the app without the usual swarm of U.S. posts.
This actually feels like a ghost town. Why is no one posting? Because they're all gone. They've all been banned.
But then...
they're back with a vengeance. I literally posted a video about Americans. 2 hours later, they were already commenting, "We're back, we're back." I'm never doubting you again.
So how did we get to this moment?
Well, back in 2020, the Trump administration started a push against Chinese communication apps. Here's then-Secretary of State Mike Pompeo back in July of 2020.
Whether it's TikTok or any of the other Chinese communications platforms, apps, infrastructure, this administration has taken seriously the requirement to protect the American people from having their information end up in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party.
That was followed by a flurry of executive orders from President Trump, which banned transactions with the Chinese owners of TikTok and WeChat out of concern that these apps could compromise U.S. national security. Then Trump gave ByteDance 90 days to divest from its American assets.
TikTok ended up suing the U.S. government in response.
Talks of ByteDance possibly selling to American software companies fizzled out, and President Biden paused efforts to ban TikTok when he took office in 2021. But the federal government kept a close eye on TikTok.
The Biden administration banned it from being downloaded on federal government devices. And then in March of 2023, there was that infamous five-hour congressional hearing with Shouzi Chu, TikTok CEO.
Here's Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas asking the CEO, a Singaporean citizen, about his connections to China.
Have you ever been a member of the Chinese Communist Party?
Senator, I'm Singaporean. No.
Have you ever been associated or affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party?
No, Senator. Again, okay. I'm Singaporean.
And then another shift. As the fight in the courts continued, Trump started to distance himself from the TikTok ban. Here he is talking to CNBC in March of 2024.
The thing I don't like is that without TikTok, you can make Facebook bigger. And I consider Facebook to be an enemy of the people.
After Congress overwhelmingly passed a bill that would force ByteDance to sell TikTok or risk a ban, Biden signed it into law.
That was, of course, followed up by TikTok suing the U.S. government again, this time pointing to free speech. The Supreme Court unanimously upheld the law banning TikTok unless it was sold this past Friday.
But the blackout was short-lived, and as we said, after 14 hours, the app welcomed its users back with a pop-up message, quote, "As a result of President Trump's efforts, TikTok is back in the U.S.
For now.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org. From Jarl and Pamela Moan, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts. And from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, at wtgrantfdn.org.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Juana Summers.
And I'm Elsa Chang. When Donald Trump was sworn in on Monday, he was flanked by billionaires Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Mark Zuckerberg. An American government closely aligned with money and power is something that outgoing President Joe Biden warned about in his farewell address.
Today, an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy, our basic rights and freedoms.
Oligarchy. It's a word more commonly associated with wealthy businessmen in Eastern Europe, right? But it's being used increasingly here in the U.S. We wanted to understand why, so we called someone who's written a lot about this. Jeffrey Winters is a professor of political science at Northwestern University and joins us now. Welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Nice to have you. So I suppose we should just first define what an oligarchy is exactly. What is your understanding of the term? And where does this term come from?
Yeah, you know, its current interpretation in the United States is quite negative. I teach a course at Northwestern, and on the very first day of this Oligarchs and Elites course some years ago, one of the students said, Russia has oligarchs and the United States has rich people. And there was this sort of interpretation, right? But it turns out the word has a lineage that goes back more than 2,500 years. And the meaning is simply persons who are super powerful because they are super wealthy. And it is the use of wealth power as political influence that has always defined oligarchs throughout history.
In other words, an oligarch is an extremely wealthy person, and there is the suggestion that that person uses their wealth for personal gain.
Well, okay, it might be personal, but it is the deploying of it in politics. So let me give you an example. There might be an oligarch who feels very strongly about abortion policy, mm-hmm. but they're using that money power in the political system to sway the political outcome. That's one. But overwhelmingly, what you refer to is correct, which is the number one political objective of oligarchs throughout history has been wealth defense. Defending their fortunes from redistribution.
Well, I want to get back to Biden's farewell address in which he talked about this rising oligarchy in America. And he likened today's super wealthy to the robber barons of the 19th and early 20th centuries, you know, to people like John D. Rockefeller, Cornelius Vanderbilt, J.P. Morgan. Is that a fair comparison? Would you say that today's mega wealthy hold the same kind of influence that those men did way back then?
Yeah, and the thing that really stands out is that there was a visibility, an awareness of this kind of power being exerted politically at that time, and it kind of parallels the consciousness or awareness that people have now. And so, yes, in between that long period, there have been oligarchs and there's been oligarchic power, but it hasn't been as visible and as agitating to people as it is now.
But let me ask you this. I mean, these so-called modern-day oligarchs, they are, for the most part, quite successful people. You know, they're leaders in business. Their companies are a huge part of the American economy. Are there benefits, legitimate benefits, to have them sharing their expertise and insights with government leaders or future leaders?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about people who are very, very talented. There's no doubt about it. They wouldn't be where they were unless they inherited their money. They wouldn't be where they were. But I don't, you know, I don't think the United States should avoid drawing on very talented people. It, of course, it should draw on talented people. But one of the ways that's been done, Elsa, is that in the past, if you were brought in, for example, from industry or from the finance sector, you had to sort of leave that position and come and serve and not still maintain your businesses. You had to be sort of shielded from doing things that were beneficial to your business. So those kinds of protections in the past have been very important.
Well, you've kind of been nipping at the edges of the answer to the next question, but let me just ask you straight out, what do you see as the biggest risk of a president being closely aligned with the billionaire class?
Well, I would just simply say it's not the first time. I mean, one of my messages is this is not new. It's only its visibility is new. Really, that is the fundamental message. The United States is a vastly more unequal society today than it was 50 years ago. And that's partly because the power of oligarchs has been so great for the last half century that the Rand Corporation, for example, estimates that over those 50 years, $50 trillion in wealth has been shifted upward to a very small number of people, while people at the average level of society have not benefited. So,
but would you say that there is something unprecedented about this current administration in the sense of the kind of political influence you see from the mega, mega rich? Or is this just history replaying itself?
I think it is history replaying itself. I wouldn't go so far as to say absolutely unprecedented. But I would say definitely one of the reasons we in the country are talking about it is it is incredibly visible and people are concerned about the impact.
I mean, we saw the seating chart at inauguration. It is very visible. The billionaires were right there.
Yeah, literally right there. There is a risk to having that much visibility, which is we saw in the Gilded Age and the robber baron era that there was a backlash. So one of the strategies of oligarchs throughout history has been not to be too visible. And that has worked well for them. And visibility has not always worked well.
Well, I was just going to ask you, how do you see Trump's alliance with Musk and other powerful CEOs playing out? Do you see a backlash down the road from people who have just had enough with this?
I'm going to deflect the question by saying political scientists have a hard enough time explaining what has happened.
Really? You can just get your crystal ball out?
We're challenged just explaining what has happened.
Fair enough.
Jeffrey
Winters is a professor of political science at Northwestern University. He's also author of the upcoming book called Domination Through Democracy, Why Oligarchs Win. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
Hollywood is awaiting Oscar nominations in the midst of an awards season interrupted by wildfires. Could this year's Oscar nods include Wicked? Or maybe the religious thriller Conclave?
I've cheated and I've lied. I've broke down and I've cried. I've got nothing to hide no more. I've loved and I've hurt, broken people down with words, more grace than I deserve, for sure. Known to be crazy, known to be wild, mama had herself a little devilish child, ain't no stranger to the troubles at my door. I've been at the wrong
place at the wrong time, chasing all the wrong things most of my life, and every kind of loss that you can't find. But I got one thing right, been the kind of guy girls' mamas don't lie, running with the wrong crowd on the wrong nights, cause I've been wrong about a million times. But I got one thing right, you. Through my pain, kept us patient while I changed. Never even crossed your mind to walk away. When I was getting crazy, reckless and wild, acting like my mama's little devilish child. It took a heart like yours to find its place. I've been at the wrong place at the wrong time, chasing all the wrong things most of my life, and every kind of loss that you can't find. But I got one thing right, been the kind of guy girls' mamas don't lie, running with the wrong crowd on the wrong nights. I've been wrong about a million times, but I got one thing right, you. I've been wrong about a million times, but I got one thing right, I got one thing right. I've been at the wrong place at the wrong time, chasing all the wrong things most of my life, and every kind of loss that you can't find. But I got one thing right, been the kind of guy girls mamas don't lie, running with the wrong crowd on the wrong night. I've been wrong about a million times.
All right, we are going to go live to the Sockeye Classic in Dillingham, Alaska. This is Virgil, this is KSDP, and we're going to go to the announcement of the teams.
This broadcast is brought to you by KSDP. Okay, Revere is jumping for the rookies. Jump for ball. Mary Mae gets the ball and takes it down the court. Passes it to Rivera. Rivera shoots the three. No good. Tia gets the ball, gets the rebound. Mary has the ball. Passes it to Jada. Jada back to Mary. Jada takes the mid-range. This is... Ella gets the rebound, passes it back to Mary. Ella shoots at the high post. Ball stays on the side. Jade taking the ball in. Jade passes to Tia. Tia shoots, and there's two. Manico takes the ball down the court. Manico takes the ball out from underneath the hoop. 20 passes to 15, 15 back to 23. 22 with the ball. Dribbles, passes to 20. Rivera steals. Rivera takes. Yes, sir.
fall down. Half a loop for 15. 15 passes it to 20.
Tia playing good defense.
Jump ball.
There we go.
Manicotic's ball. They're taking it out on sideline.
No, no. 24 passes it to their two. Oh, Revere hustles for the ball. She gets it. She takes it. Passes. Oh,
to Mary, pass. And Mary takes it back out to three. Passes it to Revere. Back to Mary in the paint.
Mary takes
she
it.
Makes it. Rookie's at six. Manicotic at zero.
Shine takes the ball down the court for Manicotic. Passes it to 24. 23. 32 cuts up and gets the ball. Looks like she's taking the drive. Shoots. No good. Mary gets the ball. Passes it to Rivera as Rivera takes it down the court. Passes to Jada. Jada dribbles to the left, passes to Mary, Mary to Ella. Ella with the assist to Mary. Mary shoots the three, misses. Revere got the rebound, passes to Jada. Mary shoots the three, and she makes it. White taking the ball out. Manica that calls a timeout. It takes the ball in after the timeout. 24 takes the ball on the court. Ooh, and her teammate misses the pass. Now Jada passing the ball into Mary. Manicotic looks like they're doing a diamond press. Revere passes to Ella. Ella gets the lay.
Takes it down the court. Passes it to 32. Manicotic's ball. She drives it in, passes it to 24. She shoots it. No good.
Revere gets the ball and takes it and gets stuck and passes it. And 15 and Manicotic gets the ball. Passes it to 24. 24 tries to drive. And Jada fouls her. Shooting the free throw. She misses her first. This one's shoots her second. Makes it. The score is now 1-11. Rookies up. As Manicotic diamond presses, the rookies make their way down the court. Tia gets 30 steals the ball from Tia. Mary gets it back and looks and gets it to Ella. Ella makes it. Manicotic's 32 takes the ball down the court. Ella on her. She looks to take the drive. Passes it to 24. Passes back to 32. And
Passes to 20. Ooh, skip pass to 15, and Ellis gets the steal. Looks, and they call a jump. White takes out the sideline. Passes it into 32. Screen set for 32. 12 takes the three. No good. Tia gets the rebound. Take it down the court. Passes to Jada. Jada looks to Mary. Mary to Ella. Ella takes the three. Ooh, close. Jada gets the rebound. Looks to get out. Gives it back to Ella. Jada gets another rebound. Gives it to Mary. Mary looks like she's resetting. Passes to Tia at the high post to Ella, and Ella shoots. Oh, misses. Out on Tia. Manica like taking the ball out after Kaden subs in for Ella. 32 taking the ball down the court. Screen set. Didn't work though. 32 takes it for the mid-range and she makes it. And I'm pretty sure 32 is a freshman or eighth grader.
What?
Mary to out to Rivera. Rivera looks for the dive. Passes back to Mary. Mary shoots the three. Misses. Jada gets the rebound and shoots. Misses, but Cadence gets the rebound. Stolen by Manicotic. Out on... Balls out on Manicotic. Jada takes the ball out. Passes to Rivera. Back to Jada. Jada's wide open. Passes to Mary. Oh, stolen by 24. Out on Mary. That was close. 12 on Manicotic. Takes the ball out. Passes to 24. Takes the ball down the court. Mm-hmm. 24 shoots. Kaden gets the rebound. And they call a jump. And it's white ball. Rikis are playing a man defense. As 15 takes the ball out. A little confusion with the rest. That's all right. He got on the right side. 24 takes the ball and passes to 23. Cadence and Tia both on 23 right now. Passes 24. 24 throws up the three. Misses. Mary takes the ball, sprints the ball down the court. Fills it down for the team to catch up. Mary passes to Jada. It almost stolen by 15. Jada passes to Mary. Mary shoots the three. Oh, close. Right off the rim. 24 gets the ball and sprints it down the court. 32 goes for the... and misses. 32 gets her own rebound and takes it out. Looks like she's gonna shoot the three. 23 pump fakes and hopes the mom shoots her three. Misses. And Alan White and Jada takes the ball in. Oh, Jada, Carly subs in for Jada. Now Carly's taking the ball in. Right now we got Carly, Mary, Rivera, Cadence, and Tia on the court. Mary takes the ball down. Drives. Ooh, the stolen, but Cadence fights for that jump ball. Rookie's ball. I think there's confusion on whose ball it is right now. And it is black ball. Carly takes the ball out. Rivera goes up for screen. Oh, pass missed. Now 24 is taking the ball down the court and shoots the layup. Misses. Mary gets the ball. Oh, stolen by 32, but Rivera gets the rebound. And Carly has the ball down the court. And double team. Travel called on Carly. 24 taking the ball out the sideline. Passes into 15. 24 takes the ball back down. Shoots the deep three. Misses. Revere gets the rebound. Mary takes the ball down the court. Looking. Shoots the three. Misses. And that's the end of the first quarter. That's the end of the first quarter. The score is 3-13. Rookies up. End of the first quarter. Sandpoint Eagles play at 6:30 against the Bristol Bay Angels. This broadcast is brought to you by KSDP. Manicoke takes the ball out. Oh, 6 o'clock. Thanks, Brandon. Ford tries to take the drive. No good. Passes to 20. Candace is guarding her. 32 gets the ball. Shoots the three and misses. Carly takes the ball down the court, passes to Mary. Keenan's wide open under the hoop. Tia takes a shot, makes it. Manicoke takes the ball out. 24 taking the ball down the court. 24 takes the drive. Misses. Revere gets the rebound. Takes it down the court. Looks, passes to Mary. Carly wide open. Shoots the three. Oh, misses. 20 gets the rebound for Manicotic. As Manicotic sets up, passes to 24. Carly guarding 24. 20 sets a screen for 24. She shoots a three. Misses. Revere gets the rebound. Passes to Tia. And Tia takes it down. It's 2-on-1. Tia shoots a layup. Makes it. Manicoke takes the ball out. Almost loses it. Rookies are set up in a man defense. 24 passes. 24 looks to pass, passes it straight to Rivera. Tia gets the ball, takes it down, and passes it to Mary. Rivera tries to set the screen. Mary passes to Rivera. Rivera takes the three and makes it. Score is 3-20. Rookies up. 20 takes the ball out, passes it to 24. She walks the ball up the court. Looking at what she could do. Passes to 32. Vera they're playing defense somebody too. 24 tries to set screen on her. Doesn't work. 32 looks to take the drive. 12 gets the ball, shoots the three. Misses. That's all right. Mary gets the ball. Mary takes it down the court. She gets all the way into the paint, but loses it, and 12 steals it from her. 15 taking the ball down the court. Passes it to 32. 32 takes the deep three. Makes it. Timeout. Called by Fanny Jo. And right now the score is 6-20, rookies up. And number 32 on Manicotic, 8th grade, is doing really well. Oh, she's an 8th grader? And rookies are doing really well with the score of 6-20. We have Rivera, Ella Piper, Mary, and Tia in. Piper passes the ball into Mary. Mary takes it down the court. Passes a Tia up high post. Ella to Tia. Tia gets her own rebound, but stolen by Manicotic's 23. Piper almost gets the steal. Who's on 23? 23 shoots the three. And Rivera gets the rebound, calling a jump ball. Piper passes the ball into Mary. Mary takes it down the court. Passes to Tia in the paint. Oof. Tia on the floor. Jump ball called. Manicotic's ball. 23 takes the ball and passes to 24. 24 takes the ball down the court. Piper gets around the screen. 24 shoots it, misses. Ella gets the rebound. Tia takes it down the court with 32 on her. She gets it, passes to Ella. Oh, out of bounds. What? 20 takes the ball up for Manicotic. Or 32 does. 32 takes it down the court. Shoots the three. Misses. Jada comes in for Rivera. And Mary takes the ball out. Mary takes it on the court. She gets all the way up to the high post. Passes it to Piper. Piper to Ella. Ooh. Ball tipped out of Ella's hand by number 20. Jada taking the ball out underneath the hoop. Passes it to Mary. Mary shoots the three. Misses. 15 gets the rebound and takes it down the court. Wide open at the three. 32 gets the ball. Looks like she's deciding what she wants to do. Passes it to 20. 20 to 24. 24 tries to take the drive. Doesn't work. Passes it back to 32. Mary on 32 right now. She looks to take the drive. Passes it to 24. 24 takes the mid-range. Ella gets the rebound. Stolen by 23. 23 in the corner, passes to 24, who shoots the layup, misses. Mary gets the rebound, takes it down the court, looks to Ella, sees Ella gets the ball underneath the hoop, misses. Tia gets the rebound, but is swarmed by everybody. White ball. Mm-hmm. Honeybee passes it into 32 as 32 takes the ball down the court. Mary's still on 32. 32 passes to 24 at the high post, and she goes out to the three. Piper on 24. 20 cuts. 32 gets the ball and is wide open. Passes to 23. She takes the three. Misses. Ella gets the rebound, which is tipped to her. Ella takes it all the way and shoots this layup. Makes it. Timeout called by Manny Kodick. Score is 6-22 with the rookies up. And with a minute 43 left in the second quarter. Angel looks like she's coming up with a plan for the rookies. Manicotti taking the ball out. And they... Long buzzer. On the court we have Jada, Mary, Piper, Ella, and Tia. And 24 takes the ball down the court for Manicotti. Screen set by 15. Doesn't work though. 24 looks for the drive. Doesn't take it. Piper stops her. Passes to 15. To 32. 32 with the ball. She's dribbling around. Passes to 15. 15 takes the mid-range. Misses. Ella gets the rebound. Passes to Mary. And Jada takes the ball down the court. Jada looks. Passes to Tia. Tia back out to Jada. Mary passes to Piper for the three. Misses. Tia gets the ball, gets the rebound, passes to Jada. Jada loses the ball. Mary gets it. And that's an over and back on the rookies. Backcourt violation. Whoops, wrong thing. Manico takes the ball out. 24 with the ball. And Piper's doing a good job at keeping her from taking the drive. And passes to 32. 32. Takes the ball at the corner three. Passes to 20 at the wing. Back to up top with 23 with the ball. 15 sets the screen. Doesn't work. 23 still with the ball. Ella guarding her. 23 shoots. Foul on Jada, fouls 23. And we got 21 seconds left in the second quarter. The score is 6-22. Number 23 shooting the free throw and makes her first one. El Santos. Shoots her second free throw. Misses. Piper gets the rebound, taking it down the court. Passes to Mary. Mary gets it in the corner. Oh, out on Mary. And now we have Jada with two fouls. And with 15 seconds left in the second quarter. 24 taking the ball down the court for Manny Kodick. She looks for the drive. Doesn't work. Ella stops her. Passes to 23. She shoots. 23 shoots. Misses. Ella gets the rebound, and that is the end of our first half. The score is 7-22.